proceed with our program. Bill Johnson will be introducing our speaker. Bill is the lead director for UPS. So, Bill, you're on.
Good afternoon. My name is Bill Johnson. I am the lead director at UPS, and I'm also a long-term Neapolitan, and it's my privilege to introduce David to you today. Now, I was given very specific instructions not to take more than a minute. My wife said, be nice. David said, please don't say anything that you won't say at a board meeting. So I'll just give you some unique insights on David. I know the bio's been passed around. First, I will say he is one of the most gracious, unassuming, humble CEOs I've ever been around. And he's not defensive, which makes my job much easier as lead director. He also is one of the most passionate college football fans you will ever meet. Unfortunately, he's a big Mississippi State fan. And, you know, that's sort of the way it goes. But he also has set a task for he and his son. Their goal is to visit the 50 top college football venues to see a game before he either retires or before he retires. And I believe they're at 28 right now, so they've made great progress. I won't get into the 2006 Rose Bowl where I rooted for one team, he rooted for the other. But with that, I will introduce you to what I consider to be one of the best CEOs in the United States, and that's David Abney.
Well, good afternoon. They told me I could forget about this one. So, well, one, Susie, I want to thank you very much. That's the nicest Bill Johnson has ever been to me. It's because his wife gave him very clear instructions, so thank you. I'd also like to recognize Sandy and Sarah Rant, and Sandy's right there, and Sarah, and Sandy's also on our board, so if you wonder why I'm here today, two of my board members are here, so they used a little bit of influence. But seriously, glad to be here. I was real impressed with the membership, real impressed with the program that you're doing with the high school students. And I have to tell you, in my job, I get to go to a lot of venues and meet a lot of people. Some of them are very important people. I don't think I've ever been as intimidated as I was when these eight high school students talk about what they're going to do with their lives. That was so impressive. And the only advice I'd like to give you is you already have a very clear path. And we just say that there's going to be bumpy times. There's going to be things that are going to happen. But never give up your dream and never let anyone, including that voice that we all have in our heads sometime, never let that voice tell you what you cannot do. You know, we have one chance in life. Thank you. But it doesn't sound like you guys have much of that voice in your head, because it was very clear what you wanted to do. And my honor to speak here, 34 years. And I met at least one of the founding members. I think he's founding member, Bumpy, and earlier. And just real impressed with not only the membership, but also with the quality of the speakers that you've had over the years. Always like to look at that when I'm going to speak at an organization. And then to hear that you have a waiting list to join this club that's almost as long as the number of members. That says a lot about the club, too, that's for sure. And I've already recognized Bill's wife and Sandy's wife, so if I want to have a good weekend, I better introduce my wife. So, Sherry, if you'd stand up, please. Sherry has, we've been married for 41 years, and I've been with UPS for 44 years, so I tend to do things in very long durations, you know. And, we'd just like to talk a little bit, I'll just quickly, a couple of things about myself and UPS, and then go to the main points that I'd like to talk about. But I did start UPS when I was 18 years old, and loaded trucks, and people asked me if I was ever a driver. Well, I had to get promoted to become a driver. I was at the bottom as loading trucks. Then when I graduated from college, I drove for a year, and it was really the best thing I could have done. It's how you learn the business, how you learn what's important to our customers. I did have a few friends that kind of laughed when I graduated from college and then drove a truck, but they're not laughing anymore, so I guess it turned out okay. So UPS has been around 112 years and will be this year. And I started in Seattle, Washington. We're now in 220 countries and territories. We have almost 450,000 employees throughout those countries, and we're the ninth largest airline in the world. We don't want to be the largest. Planes cost too much money, but we certainly want to be the most efficient. And so that's kind of the quick UPS story. And really what I wanted to talk about is three realities that not only is UPS facing, but I think most all entities and most all organizations are facing in 2018. And the first one is just the exponential change that's driven by all these technological innovations that are just rolling out just very, very quickly. It used to be, and UPS was a good example of that, as a company that was very efficient, you could depend on making incremental changes every year, getting that incremental improvement, and that was enough to where you would keep up. Today, those incremental improvements are just table stakes, right? It is exponential change, and if you're not looking to do that, someone else says, and by the way, they'd love to kind of move you out of the picture, too, and so it's something that we keep in mind all the time. And one of the examples of the technology is a futurist, some of you would know, Ray Kurzweil. He said that in the 21st century that 100 years of progress would not be made, that 20,000 years of progress would be made in the 21st century. And so we can all debate if that could or cannot happen, but the point, I think, is not debatable. That is how much this world is changing. So whether it's UPS or any other organization, if people think that status quo is going to be okay when the world is progressing the way it is, they're just kind of living in denial, you know. So it's not whether you change or not, but it's how much that you change. One of the benefits of all this technology is that small and mid-sized businesses all throughout the world can compete globally through technology, and so it creates a lot of opportunities. It also gives a lot of these small asset-light entrepreneurs the opportunity to try to compete with the big established companies that do have the assets. So if you were to ask me, what are you most worried about competitively 20 years from now, it would not be the established companies that we've been competing with quite a while. It would be these new entrepreneurial startups that they are trying to just cherry pick and take the most favorable part of our business and other businesses and then move on from there. So technology is certainly one of those realities that we're all dealing with, and it has made life a lot better, but it's also changing life as we speak. The second one is very connected, is e-commerce, right? And e-commerce is just growing tremendously. And consumers now, they know what they want. And they expect to get it when they want to get it. They expect it to be delivered wherever they are, in whatever mode. And they also expect free shipping, right? And by the way, I get asked about that occasionally. We do not provide free shipping, right? And neither do these companies that you order from, by the way. You know, it's free shipping after it's baked in to the price, of course. But e-commerce is a $2.3 trillion market, and is expected to be even 75% bigger by 2021. You know, in just 3 or 4 years. That just shows it is now 50% of our business, and during peak season, it is a much higher percent of our business. And I would like to think I have a lot of customers in this room. You have made that very clear, the way that you order and you have the UPS driver come to your house. I do really appreciate the fact that you order all these Christmas presents. And I just wish you'd order just a little earlier. Yeah. We don't have to wait till December 22nd to order Christmas presents. But it is a great opportunity, and cross-border e-commerce is actually growing at 6 times GDP. You think of how many opportunities in the world that are growing 6 times GDP. And so it's really changing our network, and it's causing us to change the way that we do business. And then the third one, and it is connected to the first two, so all three of these are interrelated, and that is these emerging markets and the growing middle classes in these emerging markets. You hear a lot about China. China's middle class is larger than the entire U.S. population, and India is not far behind, and there's a lot of other emerging markets too. And I'll just give you another number. By 2025, annual consumption of the emerging markets will reach $30 trillion. And it is growing at a greater than 6% rate compared to developed countries. It's growing 0.5% to 1%. So it just tells you a whole lot about how world trade is going to continue to change. We believe that that these emerging markets is the biggest commercial opportunity that the world has ever seen. In the history of capitalism, there's just so many people wanting to live the same life that the people in the western part of the world have lived for many, many years. So it's just creating a lot of opportunities. It's also causing a lot of turbulence, right? And we certainly see it in politics. We see it not only in the United States. We see it throughout the world. So this is not just a U.S. issue. Now, when you connect buyers and sellers throughout the world, and we deliver about 20 million packages a day, you would expect that trade wars, we're not a real big fan of trade wars, right? And but we are aware that there are issues out there that need to be dealt with. And when it comes to China and following trade rules and living up to the law and their obligations, we certainly believe that that is extremely important. We just get very, very concerned when you start talking about tariffs and then retaliatory tariffs and how that can spin. And so we deal with administrations throughout the world talking about these issues. And one example that I give, and it kind of represents the U.S. trading patterns with China, is that our planes always come from China to the U.S. full, right? I mean, it just makes sense with all the products that we're getting. And they always have gone back, well, say half full, just to kind of give you a generalization. We believe the answer to global trade is to find ways to open up those markets and to make sure that we can hit those at Chinese middle class that I was talking about, where we can have our planes or have the U.S. economy having the trade much more balanced, which is what's being attempted at this point in time. We do not believe the way to balance trade is to have our planes coming from China to the U.S. at 50% and go back 50%. So That is not what we're looking for. But we'll see how it goes. We're encouraged by the recent negotiations, and there's more negotiations. But once that gets settled, let's say that it will, then we've got Brexit, which is certainly some of the same worries and concern. You have that issue, and you have others throughout the world too. But at the same time, there's been some positive developments. The EU-Japan trade agreement, and of course the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement that was recently passed. One of my Canadian friends refers to that agreement as USMCA, because that's what they believe the president did to them, you know. Now, I'm not so sure that that's the case, but that is their view anyway, or their idea of a joke, I guess. But one of the reasons trade is so important, though, is 95% of the world's consumers are outside of the United States. So when we start talking about trade wars, or we start talking about restricting our markets, we just have to be very careful that we're not restricting U.S. small and mid-sized companies from being able to reach 95% of the world's consumers. And every time we see the U.S. reach a trade agreement, our export business out of the U.S. goes up 20%. It's not because UPS is making more things. It's because our customers are. And so that's why we believe that trade is just so important. And that's why we're continuing to invest in places like India and China and other places. So let me just talk for a few minutes, because I've been told about this strict downtime that you guys have. So if you keep looking at my watch, it's not because I'm worried about what time UPS plane's coming in. It's I don't want to get the hook. And but I want to talk a little bit about the UPS response to all of these opportunities and challenges. And we believe that transformation is just a way of doing life. There's just too much change happening, and so we refer to it as continuous transformation. So we have to tell our people that not only are we transforming this business, but there's no end to this transformation. It's going to be continuous. We have to accept it. We have to realize that if we're going to stay relevant, that that's what we have to do. We feel like we're taking this on from a position of strength financially, and we lead our industry, and we feel good about that. But the reason we have to change is we can feel so good about this 111 years of our past. Our future is not going to be nearly as positive as our past if we don't make these changes and if we don't adjust to these trends. So I believe we will have a bright future. I just know it won't be unless we make the changes that we need to do. And one of the areas that we're focusing on is improving our efficiency and our response to our customers, and that's through technology. And technology is just making all the difference in the world in our business. We formed an advanced technology group last year. I felt like we were doing a good job with immediate technologies. Felt like we weren't taking the time to look at what was coming 5 and 10 years down the road. So we formed that group. But when you think about it, for us, automating our buildings, optimizing our routes so that we assign our routes in the right order, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in a couple of minutes. But autonomous vehicles at some point, drones, all the things that you read about in the future, we have to be looking at those things today, and we certainly are. But we have an intense focus on advanced analytics. And think about that for a minute. We capture data on 20 million packages a day. There is so much that if you analyze that data that could help us in running our business. We've always been very good at what I'll call descriptive analytics. So that is numbers and stats that tell you what happened. And so we do a great job of being able to take that information, mine it, and figure out what happened. And that's good, The next step of that, though, is predictive analytics, right? So now you're moving to beyond what happened to what can happen or what could happen. And we're spending more time in that area, too. And then the next step, and it's the most important one, and it's the one that successful companies are going to be moving to, is prescriptive analytics. So now you're looking, okay, what is the best way to handle a particular problem or the best answer to what you're trying to do? So you're moving beyond the predictive, and you're actually focusing on how you can improve the situation, improve the consequences. And our optimized dispatch is an example of that. We call it Orion. Each of the letters stand for a different name. But really what it does is it gives us the ability to predict the way the route should be run. And it can give the driver step-by-step instructions. And it can change 1,000 times a day if it needs to because there's a traffic accident or any of those things. So that's the prescriptive piece that I've talked about. So really, at the end, wanted to just say that transformation is not a noun. It's a verb. It is something that we have to continue to be doing. It is certainly continuous, and it's something that all organizations are really facing at this point, and we believe it's the key to our future. So with that, Bill, I'm giving it to you for a little time extra, and I'll bring it back to you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, since this is my first one of these, I don't know how many questions is normal, but I've never seen this many, even from our board. But the first question, David, I have to ask you, and it relates to a number of questions. Can you buy the Naples post office? And there are about half a dozen questions relating to privatizing the post office and how much you could save and is it worth doing?
Okay. You know, I have had that question once before. I was talking to a key senator about the need for postal reform and how we believe that they use monopoly revenues to compete against us and other private companies. And this senator looks me right in the eye and says, you know, David, what you need to do? You need to buy the post office. I said, Senator, they lost $8 billion last year. He goes, I know. That's why you need to buy. But seriously, we believe post office is a very important part of the fabric of the country. And we believe a strong mail delivery is very important. We're not trying to deliver letters. We just believe that they should account for their cost. And we believe that meaningful reform needs to happen. We don't mind competing against the Postal Service. We just want them to have to account for their cost and price accordingly. So that's about as far as I can go on the Naples Post Office.
Talk about it at the next board meeting. The other, and probably a third of the questions are related to this. You want to talk about Amazon and its ability or willingness to compete and the potential impact on UPS and, frankly, the whole transportation industry?
That's right. So I know that's Bill Johnson's question. There is not a doubt in my mind. I've got to analyze that handwriting. But, no, I've been in this job a little over 4 years. I have never attended a single meeting in that 4 years that I don't get asked about Amazon. And I'm convinced next time I go to my dentist for my twice-a-year checkup, he's going to tell me Amazon's his biggest competitor because everyone else does. But for us, Amazon is a good customer, and they're a customer that if you show them how things can work to your advantage and to theirs, they respond very quickly. They didn't grow the way they did by not being a very efficient organization. Now, we don't have any questions about whose best interests they have in mind, right? Obviously, it's theirs, but there are times that it works together and we do that. They have also built some infrastructure. There's more supplemental infrastructure, but we'll have to see how it goes. So with any of our large customers that start to outsource and insource, we just have to watch carefully. We can't be naive And if we start to think that they're more of a competitor than they are a customer, then we have to make those decisions accordingly. But we constantly monitor what they do. There's no doubt about that. And it does come up most every board meeting, wouldn't you think? All right. Thank you.
Take a question from a student. It also reflects one that was asked by a member in here, and I think it's an interesting question for those who have been in leadership roles. David, what is the most challenging or frustrating aspect of coordinating an internal corporation, especially in the age of sanctions, trade wars, and tariffs, and dealing with a board of directors?
That is a blue card, so I guess it did come from a student, but an excellent question. And I think that I'd answered on two regards. And first, at the same time we see all these challenges, we do see lots and lots of opportunities, and we have to work on that. But from the government or the public policy side, we have learned that you have got to engage and engage early, and you try to get the facts in front and you try to be able to guide the conversation. Doesn't mean that you can every time. The other thing, and I think some public companies do this better than others, but we clearly know that we have to deal with Republicans, we have to deal with Democrats, and there are going to be changes. And we just don't want to position UPS to where we are just solidly in one camp, you know. We're here to serve the needs of our customers. There are some issues, such as diversity and inclusion, that are so important to us that we're going to take very strong stands. There's other things that we believe is best solved by government, and we don't take as many stands on social issues as people want us to, on both sides, right? And so we think we're always hitting it just about right when the Republicans claim that we're too much slanted towards the Democrats, and the Democrats claim the same thing toward the Republicans. If we get talked about that, we feel like we're probably where we need to be. But that would be one, and the other is how to communicate with our people in this day and age, because through social media, if we don't communicate quickly, someone else does it for us, and half the time they don't have accurate information, and they don't have our best interest at heart either at times. So really on how we can communicate for our people and get the messages across on a timely basis.
Since we're nearing the end of our time, I have two simple questions, David. One, is it true that UPS drivers can only make right turns? And two, when will UPS be out of the internal combustion engine?
Oh, okay. I'll answer the first one first. It's a little easier. But I wouldn't say that UPS drivers only make right turns, but we plan our routes to where it is as much right turns as humanly possible. So the great majority, and think about it, from a safety point of view, right turns are a lot safer than left turns. You're turning right into traffic. Think about it from a time standpoint. You're going to make right turns much quicker, right? Left turns, you're going to be constantly waiting to clear the intersection. That sounds really petty, other than the fact that at 20 million packages a day, those decisions add up really, really quickly. So that's why we adopted the right turn mentality years ago, and it's worked out well for us. On the other piece, we have this rolling laboratory of alternative fuel engines, and we're looking at all different opportunities, whether it's hybrid or hydraulic hybrid, electric, solar cell, I mean, just as many things, nitrogen, as you can think of. And we have about 10,000 trucks that are operating on some kind of alternative fuel. And we're consistently or constantly looking to advance that. We have the largest order from Tesla of electric tractors that we hope to get later this year. We'll see about the timing, but we think that's a big step. But combustible engines are going to be here for quite a while, and they may become less and less. But anybody that thinks that 5 years down the road, combustible engines aren't going to be a big part of the country. I have a different view on that. All right?
I guess we have time for one more. I'm sure I'm going to get in trouble for this. Okay, good. David, two other questions, that one from a student, one from not. When will drones be used to deliver packages at UPS?
All right. I do feel like this is a board meeting, I'm telling you. Next time I attend a presentation like this where I have two board members, I think I'll just have a meeting with them beforehand, get their questions out of the way. But we are already using drones today on a daily basis, practical application in other parts of the world. And Rwanda is one good example of that. And it's where the roads flood during certain parts of the year. You cannot travel down them. And to deliver medicines and blood transfusions, we are using fixed-wing drones today that come right close, fly down close to the clinic. They drop the package off in midair. It's got a plastic, almost like parachute thing. The package comes down, and the clinic gets it in. And the biggest use has been transfusions for women that are in maternity, having babies and having problems, and too many of them were dying because they couldn't get these transfusions. We're expanding that to other countries. We are also doing some experimentation here in the U.S. You've got the congestion with airports and air traffic that you have to worry about, and U.S. policy's got to be developed. We do not believe, though, that over Naples there's going to be 5,000 drones that are going to be delivering dog food and all this other stuff. We do believe, though, that urgent supplies, you know, biomedicines that maybe have a lifespan of a few hours and stuff that's got big consequences that has to be delivered right away. We also see the concept of, as our driver is moving through their route, having a drone docking station at the roof of the car, and that person giving this drone the more extended deliveries that don't have the congestion of a metropolitan area. That drone goes, makes the delivery, comes back to where the package car is. I almost did this, but we don't do left turns. I got to do this. And the drone just continues to meet the driver and goes through. And that's the kind of things we're looking at right now. Okay.
This is a very interesting question. It pertains to both students and the general group, and that is, do you think it is still possible to start at an entry-level job with a company and eventually become CEO?
I'm not the most neutral person in this room about that, right? Because that's exactly what I did. And when I did do that, I didn't believe someday I was going to be the CEO of UPS. I'm not even sure at 18 that I knew what a CEO was, because there weren't any in my neighborhood. I know that much. But I do believe it's possible. Now, you know, and promotion from within is extremely important to UPS. All of our CEOs have worked through that process. Don't know that that will always be the case, but it's something we should always prepare our people to do. But two things have to happen to make that work if you're talking about with the same company. One is that companies such as UPS got to do a better job of identifying people with a lot of talent, got to get them trained, got to get them moved along the way much quicker, because millennials and the younger generations aren't going to be as patient as my generation was, right? And so we do have to move that process on much quicker. But also, if the young people are wanting to do that and wanting to have that kind of success, you can't think the grass is always greener at the next place and the next place, because if you continue to do that, then the networking and the contacts and the reputation that you can build up inside of a company is a little bit harder to do. So for that story to continue to happen, I think it will. I think both companies and employees are going to have to change a little bit of their current mentality.
Take one last question, maybe the most important and difficult question. And again, How do you maintain your ethics when doing business in countries that with much different and somewhat questionable ethics?
That's an easy question for me. And it's just because ethical behavior, integrity, honesty is something that has been drilled into UPS employees since the very first day when I was a loader for this company. And I saw a motivational film one time from that Lou Holtz was in, and he was asked how he motivated his players. And his answer, I think people thought they were going to get this real exciting answer about all the things. And his answer and his voice, which if you ever talked to him, you know his little voice, how it sounded. But his answer was, I get rid of the unmotivated ones. Think about that for a minute. But that is UPS's answer. How do we do with integrity and honesty and ethical behavior? We make it very clear what we expect. Doesn't matter who it is. It could be me or anyone down the road. We cross that line, we're gone. We know it from the very beginning. It's part of our training. And also now, obviously, with the way the law has changed, I mean, you can do something overseas and you can go to prison here in the U.S. I mean, there's just no excuse for that. We preach that to all of our people. Where we're most concerned about it, though, is anytime we do acquisitions and especially in some countries that tend to have a lot of those problems, because they haven't had that years and years of this being drilled in our heads, which is the way it is at UPS. So that's where we have to put the most emphasis. Doesn't mean that we don't have problems, but when we do, we react quickly and harshly, and we take care of those issues. Okay, well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time.